Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to One Designer, Two Ideas. I'm Pam, your host and the redesigner here. We come to you each Monday at 7:30 through the facilities of blogtalkradio.com. This network is filled with a number of talented hosts touching on a variety of subjects. Page through the programming page to find a show, in addition to mine, that may interest you. Listen, I hope you guys had a great weekend. I sure did. It was busy. I tell you what, I know a number of us are getting ready and trying to get ready for the holidays, and who is not busier than a one-armed paper hanger, as my mother-in-law used to say. But I hope that we are taking some downtime and caring for ourselves. I took a little walk this weekend, and it was surely enjoyable. And I know the kids were like, well, when are you coming back? But it was an enjoyable walk, and I sure did enjoy it. So listen, well, tonight we're going to talk about the shower curtain. And I just wondered, you know, have you ever asked or wondered where things come from, you know, in your house? How did they come to exist? Where did they come from? Who was the mind, the brain, you know, that came up with that? Well, I don't know. I'm sure that you guys know that I do design pillowcases. And sometimes when I'm sitting at the sewing machine, I'm like, wow, what a great idea. So, you know, as a custom designer myself, I'm wowed by items, you know, that we use in our homes. I'm wowed by a lot of stuff, and I'm wondering, you know, like today at the grocery store, there were clips that kept the sheet on the bottom of the on the mattress, and they clipped down at the bottom, and I had to double back because I was like, I don't think I've ever seen those. So, you know, it's invention and innovation, you know, it's a good thing. And you wonder, where do these things come from? Well, the shower curtain is one of those things that I wanted to talk about because it plays a lot of roles, but we're gonna talk about that. Although I'm grateful for the shower curtain, as is my bathroom floor, and can you imagine the conditions of our bathrooms and tubs, our floors, and the poor neighbors that live below us if there wasn't a shower curtain? Wow. If it didn't exist. Keeping water where it should be is important for so many reasons. The history of the shower curtain. Well, actually, I think we have to, you know, we can talk about the shower curtain, and we will do that. But I think that we should maybe talk about how the shower itself came to in existence, and then we can double over to the shower curtain. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the original shower. Well, the original showers were neither indoor structures nor man-made, but were common. They were common natural formations, and I'm sure you know what that might be. Yep, waterfalls. The falling water rinsed the bathers completely clean and was more efficient than bathing in a traditional basin, which required manual transport of both fresh and wastewater. So there were people bringing in water, there were people taking out water. And then where did the privacy come in at? Okay. Ancient people began to reproduce this natural phenomenon by pouring jugs of water, often very cold, over themselves after washing. There was more evidence of early upper-class Egyptians having indoor shower rooms where servants did the bringing in and the taking out. But it, you know, that had to, a lot to do while they were having the privacy of bathing inside their homes, and there was, you know, they did not have to do it at the waterfalls. The unfortunate thing is it wasn't private. So the ancient Greeks were the first people to have showers. Their adequate sewage system made of lead pipes allowed water to be pumped both in and out of communal shower rooms used by elites and common citizens alike. These rooms have been discovered at the site of the Pergamon and can also be found represented in pottery of the era. Because it seemed like there was a lot of etchings and drawings and sculptures and things that the Greeks used to relay their history. And not a bad idea either, I'll tell you what. The depictions are very similar to the modern locker room showers as they look, as we use. Even included bars to hang the clothing. The ancient Romans also followed this convention. Their famous bathhouses could be found all over and all around the Mediterranean and as far out as modern-day England. The Romans not only had these showers, but also believed in bathing multiple times a week, if not every day. The water and sewage systems developed by the Greeks and Romans broke down, however, and fell out of use after the fall of the Roman Empire. Well, let's fast forward to some modern day. Well, 18th century. Okay. The first mechanical shower operated by a hand pump was patented in England in 1767 by William Feetham, a stove maker from London. His shower contraption used a pump to force the water into a vessel above the user's head, and chain would be pulled to release the water from the vessel. Although the system dispensed with the servant labor filling up and pouring out buckets of water, the showers failed to catch on with the rich, as a method for pumping hot water through the system was not available. The system would also recycle the same dirty water through every cycle. Ooh. So this early start was greatly improved and invented in an English Regency shower design of 1810. Yes, 1810. The original design was over 10 feet tall and was made of several metal pipes painted to look like bamboo. The basin suspended above the pipes fed water into a nozzle that distributed the water over the user's shoulder. Well, we're coming forward pretty quickly, you guys. Keep up. The water on the ground was drained and pumped back through the pipes into the basin where the cycle would repeat itself. Well, they're making progress, so keep up. The original prototype was steadily improved upon in the following decades until it began to approximate the shower of today in its mode of operation. Hand-pumped models became fashionable at one point, as well as the use of adjustable sprayers from different water flows. The reinvention of reliable indoor plumbing around 1850 allowed freestanding showers to be connected to running water, to a running water source, supplying a renewable flow of water after each use. Yes. For this, then privacy was a must. So we're gonna go further, because now we have a we have dispensed with servants bringing in water. We dispensed with using recycled dirty water, and now it's actually, you don't have to hold it. No one has to hold a shower head, but actually it's freestanding and holding itself. Yes. So now we've got a freestanding unit. Well, how are we going to keep the water inside? Well, we'll tell that story when we get back. Thank you for joining me tonight, guys. We will be right back. is Pam of One Designer, Two Ideas. Thank you for tuning in to our show tonight. We are on air each Monday night at 7:30 p.m. and then again on Thursday nights at 10 p.m. We talk all things home, from its interior redesign to house cleaning tips to ways to maintain it. Through research, industry updates, and more, we try to give you the best information that we can. Our homes are our castles. Dorothy said it best when she said in The Wizard of Oz, there is no place like home. I keep that in mind when I am charged with redesigning a space or offering tips on redesign. If you want to join us, feel free to do so. If you are interested in sponsoring the show, please visit our website. Three options of sponsorship are available. Also, if you'd like to advertise during the show, you can order that at the One Designer, Two Ideas website. You can also see the items, the decor items that we design to add design to your homes. The inventory may be low right now, but will increase as time goes on. So please check back often. You can pay your sponsorship or purchase our items securely through PayPal by entering our store. That address is www.onedesignertwoideas.weebly.com. That's www.onedesignertwoideas.weebly.com. This has been Pam of One Designer, Two Ideas. Now, back to our show. Hey, everyone, and thank you for coming back with me. I'm going to give you the phone number to the studio if you're interested in calling in and want to join in on our conversation on the creation of the shower, thus the need for the shower curtain, and how, and that is going to be our next subject. And I'll give you the number. You can please call in if you'd like. That number is 1-347-326-9930. That is 1-347-326-9930. Well, I think it's interesting when we learn about how things were created and how they were invented and what was behind, what was the inspiration, and what was behind it. As I said before we went to break, we already have learned about how the shower came to be, because it actually started off as people were actually taking showers in the waterfalls, and I can imagine that would be refreshing, but I'm not sure that would be something that I would want to do. I would want to do every day. We talked about how the Greeks and the Romans and the Egyptians came up. They created their own versions of what a shower should be. There were the communal showers where servants brought in the water and took it out and then the recycled. Then there was the next units that were created that used basins above and the area where one would shower, and that water was unfortunately reused each time. And we moved forward into 1667, and then we went to 1810, where the first freestanding shower was created, and then it came inside, and then there was a way not to use water. I can't even imagine that. I'm telling you. Okay, so now we're inside. There's the shower is freestanding, and now we're going to talk about how the shower curtain came into existence. Well, the first shower curtain, as they were known, they were actually first known as the bath curtains. they were actually known as bath curtains, but the shower, we're going to refer to them as the shower curtains. The freestanding bathtubs were outfitted with poles attached to circular rods that held a curtain to afford the bather privacy. Because if you remember, as we read the history of the shower, it was created, and then there was the communal shower, and then there were the showers where the servants brought in the water, and took out the water, and that was not privacy. So the shower curtain not only was the way in which to provide privacy, but also to be used in this now newly created freestanding shower. Okay, so the first showers were these self-contained units. Only the water was reused several times since they had to physically remove the water and replenish it. Well, we moved past that. Initially, the curtain was just for privacy and not coated to be water resistant. The showers began to move into the main house instead of housed in a separate unit. The need to keep the water and keep the water off the floors arose. So now we've created our units. The freestanding units are created there. They've come inside from outside, and we have to keep where they're standing water free. And also, we have to, have some privacy when we shower. The refining of different curtain materials and weaves led to the first mostly water-resistant shower curtains. Today, you can find shower curtains made from fabrics, steel, but they are almost always used in conjunction with vinyl or plastic, and that is usually the inner sanctum or the intersection of behind. It's as a liner. It is actually used as a liner to keep the water inside the tub. At one time, it was believed that with the innovation of the enclosed showers with doors, with plexiglass doors and glass, glasses, now that the shower is now separated, because a lot of people do, and the newer homes were being built, they separated the shower from the tub, and it became freestanding and its own little house again. I think that many people thought that the tub shower combination was going to fade out, but a lot of people really do, and that is one of the things when they did the survey on HGTV, and they were asking new homeowner seekers, what are your five top things that you want in your dream home? A soaking tub was definitely one of them. And to save space, because a lot of the homes are really big, the builders have now come back toward some of the builders. I will not say all builders, but some of the builders have come back. I won't say backing away from the shower unit with its plexiglass and glass doors, but some of them are really going back to basics when they're building homes, and a lot of new homeowners, the millennials, kind of like that idea of the tub shower combo, because a number of the apartments, because they rent when they graduate from college, they rent apartments, or they buy a condominium. Most, I would say that a number of condominiums are still like apartments, and they provide the tub shower combination. So the shower curtain has is still as important today as it was back then when all these changes. I'm telling you what, innovation is something people just, you wonder, where did this come from? Well, the tub shower combination, I think it was more about saving space. And then as the time went on, people wanted larger and bigger homes. And then there were more than one bathroom in homes. And so the larger the house, the more room it would be, the more square footage it would be, which allowed builders to return the shower to its unit, so to speak, and then the tub was then in its own section of the bathroom. And that's, nothing's wrong with that, but it is a good thing that I know a lot of people thought, and in the research that I was doing, it did say that a lot of people thought that the tub shower combination was on its way out, but because a lot of people like, and it is a space saving thing, I think that a lot of builders are going back to the tub shower combinations, which needs that then again that needs the shower curtains. And the shower curtains have really, if you have went shopping lately for shower curtains, if you know have the tub shower combination, you would be surprised. There's so many designs and so many styles in it. And having a way to ensure privacy in a bath is still a priority. The shower curtain has a good chance for a great future. Shower curtains come in a variety of fabrics and styles. Whatever your decorating tastes are, you can find the perfect shower curtain to accommodate that flair. When designing the decor of a bathroom, the shower curtain becomes one of the major important pieces in the room. And a lot, if you think about it, it can become a focal piece. It, because it is actually, if you think about it, the shower curtain when it's closed is like the larger thing in the bathroom. It actually frames the shower and tub area. So there are inexpensive shower curtains that can be purchased at local discount stores, and you can pay large sums for shower curtains, and you can have them made to order. You know, with the valance, and they get all fancy. I tell you what, they come with a genuine gold trim for the right price. Whatever your need, or your design, or your style is, or your budget, you can find a shower curtain to suit you. And I know for a fact that from the shopping that I did this past weekend, I found a lot of style, of theme, of colors. If I even found a camouflage one. There was a green camouflage shower curtain at Walmart. It was fabric, and it had even the hangers were made of camouflage. And I mean, it's a good thing. They are also great and design the conversation. If you want to add a little pop to your bathroom, hey, your project can start with the shower curtain. No matter what fabric it's made of, shower curtain companies got the memo that their product is an important participant in the redesign conversation of any bathroom. But two, because water is forever present in the bathroom, the manufacturers are continuing to find ways to combat mold and mildew. As I said, you know, during my recent trip to Walmart, the designs of shower curtains they're just great. But I suggest whatever fabric that is used on the outside, that the inside should be the new Dow smelling plastic liner of vinyl. What plastic? Listen, when I was doing the research, there was some comments about the plastic liners. And I saw so many comments, and if you think about it, the liners do smell, do have that new Dow, that new toy Christmas Day smell. There is also, it's funny that so many people referred to the plastic liner just like this, like a new Dow, a new toy, a Christmas Day smell. When you were a kid and you open your packages and there were these plastic dolls or G.I. Joe men or trains, and it's the plastic smell. But they are designed to be as resistant to mold and mildew as possible. I suggest, and I know that, you know, if you remember listening and being with me before, I've talked about keeping the bathroom as dry as you can, because it is a breeding ground for mold and mildew, and that can, you know, go against our health. So keeping mold and mildew away is a good thing. You use cleaners that combat soap scum and things like that. But keeping the shower curtain as clean and dry as possible is a good thing. To keep your family safe, I suggest, as do the shower curtain designers, to follow the washing and maintenance directions as well as letting it dry completely. I did notice that when I was shopping on the other day at Walmart, when I was reading some of the directions on how to keep them clean, you can pop them in the washer, maybe wash them on gentle. The liners, the vinyl liners. Now, I know that the vinyl liners and the plastic liners, I would suggest that they be dry and that you wipe them down with, I say, because I have done this, I have wiped mine and rinsed our liner down with Comet spray. That's what I use to clean. It attacks soap, scum, and mold and mildew like no other cleaner that I've ever used. And if you ask me if this is an endorsement of Comet spray, I'm going to have to say yes, because I use it. I suggest, and I often, as I always do, I often ask you before you use anything that I suggest or promote or you know, give you advice, tell you what it does for me, that you make sure that you do your homework, you do your research, and make sure that that is the cleaner for you. Okay. So, but also, too, when you're cleaning, I think making sure that the shower curtain, the shower liner, the shower itself, and the tub itself be as dry, you know, as possible. Now, there are, if you go to Bed Bath & Beyond, there's those squeegees that you can put in the shower and maybe drain some of the water out of the tub, which is a good thing. And if you bathe, it is a good thing to wash the tub out and let it drain. Let the soap scum, you know, run down the drain. That always works too. But my friend, I have a friend named Victor. He is the president of a construction company, and was talking to, he builds homes. I love his homes. I've often wanted to ask him what is his inspiration, because I actually helped him clean one of the homes that he built before it was sold. And, you know, construction dust is really not fun, but it was so good to walk in there and see his mind, how he thinks, how he designs. And the one thing that when we were talking about the showers, because he is also one of the builders that is going back to the combination. But when we were talking about the shower, he suggested to keep it as dry as possible. He also suggests to turn on the oscillating fan when you're done with your shower to move around the steamy air, or even cracking the window to exchange fresh air with the steamy air. But I'm going to throw in this, but don't forget to close the window before you leave the room. But Victor thinks, and I have suggested this before on the show and also in the blog, that you let as much dry in the bathroom as possible, because it's the standing water that creates mold and mildew. If it's on the move, possibly, you know, you have a better chance, but it's the standing water, the drips, the water that sits there on the curtain and on the tub and in the shower that can create mold and mildew in the cracks and the crevices and you know, in the grout. Even in the grout, if there's grout in your shower, it is advisable. And I do, and thank you, Victor, for this suggestion, that I wanted to make sure that I told you what he said. He says to keep if you have a separate shower unit, when you're done, to keep the shower door open. Now, it may be, the door may be dripping water. He suggests putting a towel there or a mat under there. But he does suggest keeping the shower door open. I suggest letting some of the water run, and I do like the little squeegee that Bed Bath & Beyond has, and I'm sure they have them at Walmart. They probably have them at Dollar Tree as well. But to keep the water, keep it moving. Keep the water moving, because it's the standing water that creates the mold and the mildew. So also cracking the window to let some of the steam out, because the steam from the shower also can make it, you know, can make things in the bathroom a little worse. So make sure you exchange, get that out of the shower as fast as you can. And as I said, do not forget to close the window when you leave the room. Mold and mildew, soap scum, and the like are not our friends. The bathroom lives in moisture, and it has to be respected. Moisture has to be respected. Wash the curtain, wash your shower curtain, no matter what it's made of. If it's a cloth one, wash it. You can pop it in. I'm not going to say that. I say pop it in the washer, but I suggest that you follow the directions and instructions on the manufacturing labels for the product that you buy. And if you are going to use the new Dow, the new Train, the G.I. Joe, new toy smelling vinyl or plastic, make sure you keep that washed, wiped down as much as possible. Now, a number of them have magnets, yes, on the bottom to keep the liner attached to the tub. Make sure that you clean around those as well, because the magnets also can, that spot where they're always sitting, that water's not moving, and you can walk in, you wonder what is that smell. And a lot of times it's just standing water. Standing water has an odor. And we need to, in the bathroom, what should we do with water? Keep it moving. And I'm so glad that we have come forward from the showers and the tubs of yesteryear, back in the olden days when the water was reused. I still can't get over that. I read that and I found that in my research, and I found it in a few places doing my research, and I'm thinking, wow, yeah, not good. But anyway, make sure you keep the water moving in the bathroom. Make sure the shower curtain is washed, or follow the directions on the manufacturer's label. Maintenance the shower curtain as often as you can. Squeegee the shower. As Victor said, open the shower door. Keep it open until the steam goes out of the bathroom. Turn on the oscillating fan. Open the window. Let the steam out. These are ways in which to keep the bathroom safe from and free of mold and mildew and things like that. I suggested that to remove soap scum, mold, and mildew from your bathroom, I use Comet spray. It is a disinfectant and soap scum specialist. That's what I found it to be. Now, you just make sure, I'm asking, I suggest these things and I recommend these things, but I always ask you to do your homework. Do your own research. Discover what is best for you to use. I've said this before, I do not like to use bleach. My son Raymond was a little bit allergic to bleach, and so as they were growing up, all five of them were growing up, and he had allergies to bleach, we did not use it. So we had to find other ways. We found Greenway, that a number of the green products are pretty good. We did use a little vinegar, although my son Raymond doesn't like the smell of vinegar, so we had to kind of cut back on that. And I discovered this Comet. It's great. It's great. I certainly wouldn't suggest or recommend anything that didn't work for me. What I suggest and recommend, I use, and it works for me. Also, let me just throw this in there before we end the show. Another good thing to use when cleaning your bathroom and around the shower curtain, even the rings, is a toothbrush. Yes, a toothbrush. Toothbrushes get into places and areas that cloths and sponges cannot get in. And because they're little, that is a good way to keep the grout around the end of the tub where the wall and the tub join each other in the shower, the tracks. You can put the toothbrush down in the track where, if you have sliding doors, you're not using a shower curtain, that track can be cleaned with a little Comet. Again, I know a number of people will suggest bleach. I don't use bleach, so I cannot suggest bleach. Bleach it takes the color away from different products and different materials and fabrics, and I just don't. And plus, as I said earlier, Raymond was a bit allergic to bleach, and we didn't use it. So you have to find other ways in which to do things. So yes, make sure. I would suggest going to Dollar Tree and just getting a toothbrush to get in the tracks, to get around the edges of the tub, to get to the shower, even the nozzles on the shower head. You can just put a little comment on there, on the brush, and just wash the orange and green away from the shower heads. The shower head. I'm giving you ways. I suggest ways that I use. I find them easy and convenient, and safe, because that's how we roll here at One Designer, Two Ideas. We try to stay safe and keep clean. That's what we do. But anyway, I know that this was a long kind of way to the shower curtain, but the shower curtain would not have existed without the shower. So I felt that I thought it was a good idea to give you some history on the shower and how the shower came from the waterfall and came into the house. So there you have it. If you need any more information, you can listen to the show again. I will also post some of the points that I made tonight about the creation of the shower, the freestanding shower, and again, the most important thing to keep the water inside of the unit was the shower curtain. Yes. So I know that this has been yet another history lesson. I listened to a video by Barry Manilow where he introduces his song "This Could Be Magic." He tells the audience where the first part of the song came from, and he follows it up with "If Anybody Cares." Well, I cared that the first part of "This Could Be Magic" came from a Chopin prelude. I think you get a greater sense of everything when you know why it's created like it is, what its creation was inspired by, and from what. And all the steps that it made to get to where it is today. Now, when you think of your shower curtain, you will think of the shower and be thankful that someone had the forethought to bring the nice warm shower indoors, streaming with fresh water and not reused water. Yes, I tell you what, this is a good thing. You know, I also always hope that this show is informative, you know, and will help you find your design in a curtain, and you wake up to that will wake up your bathroom. You will maybe knowing where the bathtub and the shower came from, maybe that will make us appreciate it more. I don't know, but I like knowing where things come from and what is inspired by the people that created them. What were they thinking, and how were they thinking? I actually thought it was pretty good that the first mechanical shower operated by a hand pump was patented in England in 1767 by a stove maker. Hey, I thought that was a good idea. I mean, I thought, wow, a stove maker had the idea to come up with a handheld hand pump. Wow. Yes. Okay. Well, now we know. If you don't know, now you know. So, I hope this was informative and you got something out of it. That is why we are here every week. I so enjoy interior redesign. I so enjoy what it allows us to do, what it allows us to create, recreate our homes, and love on them again. And so that's why we're here. I learn almost every time I do research for these shows. So not only am I giving you examples and giving you guys examples and ideas of where things come from, I'm learning about this stuff myself, I tell you. So if you have any questions or comments about this or any One Designer, Two Ideas show, feel free to leave them at the One Designer, Two Ideas Facebook page. That address is www.facebook.com/OneDesignerTwoIdeas. That is www.facebook.com/OneDesignerTwoIdeas. Please join me back here on Thursday night, Christmas Eve at 10 p.m. if you're not too busy. And when we talk all about gingerbread houses, I'm not going to give it away. Do you really know where gingerbread houses come from? And we will talk about this on Christmas Eve. It will not be long, but I will share a story with you about gingerbread houses. Then come back with me next Monday where it will be the first One Designer, Two Ideas year-end show. Yay! I'm so happy. The first year-end show of One Designer, Two Ideas. I am so proud of what I do each week here. Thanks again for joining me tonight. But before we go, let's talk about baseball. And I know in your mind you're thinking, why are we talking about baseball when football is still being played? Well, let's talk about that. Well, why not? Who does not love the Chicago Cubs? Well, I know that there's a number of people who do not love the Chicago Cubs, but I'm not one of them. My dad was a Chicago Cubs fan, and I grew up, everyone in our house grew up to be a Chicago Cubs fan. We are Chicago Cubs fans. There is no place better to watch a baseball game than Wrigley Field. But tonight we're going to talk about how the Chicago Cubs are making home runs with Cub Charities. They are in the dugout for our worthwhile moment. Chicago Cub Charities harnesses the passion of Cub fans to improve the lives of children and families across the Chicagoland area and beyond. Now, I wanted to tell you a little bit about it. I'll give you the history. The roots of the modern-day Cubs Charities were planted in the early 1980s with the tragic death of Steve Matko, a Cubs infielder who passed away from cancer at the age of 27. At that time, team physician Jacob Suker inspired the team to fundraise for cancer research and treatment programs. The team charity was formed in 1981 as Cub Care and hosted its first Meet the Team fundraising event. The charity was officially incorporated in Illinois in 1986. While 1986 was the official start of the Chicago Cub Care Charities, the team's charitable efforts has roots even deeper in the past. Chicago Cub Charities' goals expanded beyond cancer research when in 1991, Cubs Care partnered with Robert R. McCormick Foundation, a valued alliance that still exists today. Since beginning the partnership, Cubs Care has given more than 700 grants worth more than $18 million to local nonprofit organizations. The McCormick Foundation matches 50 cents on every dollar donated by Chicago Cubs Charities. Cubs Care grants focus specifically on creating opportunities for at-risk youth in areas of education, youth sports, health, and wellness. In 2003, the charity changed its name to Chicago Cubs Charities, though it retained the Cubs Care name for the McCormick Foundation grants. Cubs Charities continue to grow and expand its philanthropic research today. The charity is fueled by the passion and generosity of Cub fans, corporate partners, and players through their heartfelt donations and support of Cub Charities fundraising events. These funds allow the charity to fund fund Cub Charities' new signature programs and grants to nonprofits by the Chicago Cubs Charities. Since the official incorporation of the charity in 1986, Chicago Cubs and Cubs Care together have donated more than $25 million. Proudly, Cubs Charities donations have expanded by more than 40% since the Ricketts family assumed control of the team. On average, each year of their ownership, Cubs Charities and the Cubs Care donated $2.29 million to nonprofit organizations and programs that serve youth and families in need. This is the Chicago Cubs Charity is our worthwhile moment for this Monday. This has been Pam for One Designer, Two Ideas. We thank you for joining us. Please enjoy the rest of your evening, and we will see you next Thursday. And as we say at most of the Cubs games, go Cubs, go. And thank you, the Ricketts family, for being so generous to the Chicagoland area.